You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Wednesday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here as always with David Ramil, and we're recapping the Heat's 103-99 loss to the Denver Nuggets. Despite an impressive performance from Dion Waiters and a late surge from Bam Adebayo, Nikola Jokic and his triple-double was just too much for Miami to overcome. The Heat got over some early shooting woes and took a lead into halftime, and it was a competitive game throughout. In the fourth quarter, Bam tied the game on a lob from Josh Richardson with 23 seconds remaining. Then Jokic came down. He made a tough shot over Bam, who played good defense on the play, and Jokic gave the Nuggets a two-point lead there. And with 2.4 seconds remaining, Kelly Olynyk inbounded the ball, trying to find Richardson rolling for a lob that would have tied the game, but the ball sailed over Richardson's head and out of bounds. David, the play is drawing some controversy now because Olynyk could have just made the easy play and inbounded to a wide-open Dion just a few feet away from him beyond the three-point line. What do you think about how the game ended and specifically Olynyk's decision on that inbounds?
I understand it, but I also feel it was the wrong decision. Like, I think from his perspective, he thought it was more of a slam dunk play, as Eric Reed called it during the broadcast, where he could have gotten an easier look to Richardson and Richardson would have been able to tie the game up pretty easily because he did have a step on Jamal Murray. He was able to get past him and at the last second made that cut. So it looked like he was going to be open at the basket, but Murray kind of hip checked him a little bit,
yeah,
kept Richardson from getting completely clean look. And so that's what, you know, where it led to the mistiming there from Olynyk. It would have been a great play. He could have tied it up, would have gone into overtime, and who knows what would have happened at that point in time. As far as the decision not to pass to Dion, I just think that Kelly probably doesn't feel like Dion has earned that right just yet. I guess Spoelstra did not call a play for Waiters specifically. And maybe putting the ball in Waiters' hands, you know what would have happened. He was going to take a contested three, and it probably could have gone in. I mean, there was a good chance it would have gone in because Dion has thrived in those situations in the past. You know, the result is the same. It was led to a turnover by going to Richardson. It could have resulted in a missed shot if Dion had taken it, but at this point, we'll never know. So there's always that tantalizing mystery of what could have happened. Dion might have had an opportunity to hit a game winner, because he would have hit a three at that point to put Miami up by one with no time left in the clock. It could have worked out in that favor. Who knows? I would have personally preferred the shot to go to Dion because I think he has to learn how to make those shots again. I think that's one of the things that Miami has lacked over the past, year and a half without Dion is a definitive go-to scorer. They've been scoring by committee. They haven't had somebody to be the definitive closer on this team. And that's a role in which Dion thrives and embraces completely. Something that I don't feel Richardson does. And I know that's a point of contention for some of his supporters. I love Josh. I think he's a great player. But even before that, there was a couple plays before where he took a wide open three and it missed badly. And he's trying to do something I don't think he feels 100% comfortable with, which is be that closer. And maybe the play as drawn up, I haven't seen any quotes from Spoelstra. I'm not sure if he drew it up specifically to go to Richardson or if Kelly just thought that was the best open look, the easiest basket at that opportunity. But either way, I still think he should have gone to Dion because I think, well, you know what? It would have been much more fun. We remember that 30-11 stretch. We remember those game winners over Golden State and Brooklyn. Dion has made these shots before. He loves taking and making those shots. And I think he would have been encouraged by it. Look, he was a spark plug off the bench. Maybe he was feeling it. You know, Dion being Dion, he's never lacked for confidence. So I feel like he would have been comfortable taking that shot. Probably would have been a better, more enjoyable outcome if he had taken it and knocked it down. But who knows? At this point, we'll never figure it out. And what do you think about it? Because I'm curious to see. I know a lot of fans, and somebody specifically wrote into us, why they're going to Richardson in the waning moments of a game. Do you think he should have gone to Dion?
I was okay with the play call, and I was okay with Olynyk's decision. And you made two points that I kind of want to underscore there. Dion was re-signed to be the closer, right? And that was before the ankle injury, but it was post the Warriors and Brooklyn shots and things like that. He was signed because he has that ability. Pat Riley's talked about it. He was signed to do that. The second point you made there about Josh Richardson sort of struggling there towards the end of the fourth quarter, you brought up the fact that he sort of rushed that three and it clanked off the backboard, didn't even hit rim. And then the play right after that, he got stripped on a layup attempt from Jamal Murray, just sort of put the ball right out there in front of Murray. That said, I was fine with Olynyk's decision. You mentioned that you read it as maybe like Deion didn't deserve it yet because he was just getting back, or maybe it was a comfort level thing with Kelly having played with Josh Richardson like all season long so far and just now getting acquainted with Deion because they really haven't played that much together, right? So, but I think the way I read it was the play call was, okay, first option, let's see if we can get this lob an easy score to tie the game and maybe even, look, they were down two. But if Richardson gets that lob, if he doesn't get hip-checked, he doesn't stumble, and he jumps up, grabs the lob, and dunks it home for a tie, there's a good chance he also gets fouled and can win the game at the free throw line, right? We've seen that happen all the time. Guys get fouled on plays like that. So I think that was option number one. And option number two was, all right, if the lob isn't open, well, then get it to Deion, who's right here as your outlet. Josh Richardson was open, but when Olynyk decided to throw that pass, it's just, again, he stumbled, he got hip-checked, however you want to kind of watch that, you know, you have to
Should
go
he have
back
gotten a foul call on the hip-check?
I mean, no. I mean, look, I get, like, that's the emphasis of the rules is to allow players to get to places, but it's at the end of the game, like, just let them play. I'd rather just not go down that road, but... So I'm fine. I'm actually fine with Olynyk's decision completely. I think it was... And look, this is a guy who, by the way... I've seen some people like I'd rather have Justice Winslow or Dwayne Wade, like a more experienced passer who has the ball in his hands.
It was a perfect pass from Olynyk,
and this is a guy who grew up in the world of Brad Stevens,
yeah,
right? Like, or not grew up, but like grew up in the NBA with Brad Stevens, and he runs this stuff all the time. That's his like pet go-to play is the lob inbound play as time expires, like. There's a good chance Olynyk has thrown this pass before, and so I trust him to do so. So I was absolutely fine with it.
You know who wasn't fine with it, though, is Deion. Like, the broadcast kind of showed his hand thrown up in the air on the,
he was looking
on
at
the
Olynyk.
Side panel there. He's kind of like wondering, like, what the hell? Yeah. Why didn't you find me? I was wide open.
All right, let's get to some of your Twitter questions that you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. This one comes from Kyle, who asks, do you think Deion Waiters should take Roddy Magruder's starting spot and minutes? You got to play Winslow, Wade, Josh Richardson, Tyler Johnson, Dragic when he's back, and probably now Waiters, given how he energized the offense. Magruder plays really hard, but I think he's just the odd man out. I want to talk about that point that Deion Waiters energizes the offense, because that was a big part from this game, David. I mean, the Heat were abysmal in that first quarter. They made 6 of 23 shots in the first quarter. This is just... You know, a couple nights after they just basically they missed 29 three-pointers against the Atlanta Hawks, you know? And so it looked like it was going to be a repeat of that night. Deion Waiters checks in with, I think, 47 seconds left in the first quarter, didn't get a chance to take a shot, but then in the second quarter, made his first two layups, got an early assist, looked really, really good. Miami, after going 6 of 23 in the first quarter, shot 13 of 20 in the second quarter. Deion kind of energized that offense, just like he did against Minnesota a few nights ago. This was his first game back since that Minnesota game. He missed the two games after that. There was a real part. There was an energy about him. There was something there that sparked the Heat's offense, and I do think that right now he deserves minutes. And I tweeted before the game that I thought he should have gotten the start over Magruder. That was sort of my dream lineup for this game, and he ended up playing really well. But we never saw him sort of in that lineup next to the starters in Magruder's place. But I do think that that's kind of where things should go.
Yeah, you know, we talked about this earlier in the week, whether or not Waiters was being stashed a little bit to preserve his value as a potential trade asset. So who knows how that'll work out. But at the same time, he does certainly seem like he's more dynamic a player than Magruder. I mean, his defense... might not be as good. His three-point shot is probably not as good as Rodney's. But, you know, we focus so much on his inefficiency at the rim. But you know, tonight, maybe it's just the fact that he hasn't played over the past year and a half. But, man, is his first step as good as ever. Like, his ability to get past that initial defender, to make a cut and get past whoever is on him is probably unstoppable and maybe as good as anybody else's in the league. That might sound hyperbolic, but he looked phenomenal.
You are 100% right. I mean, he doesn't look like he ever put on an extra 20 pounds. Like, he looks really – like, he looks better than – like, he that first step looks better than ever. I'm glad you pointed that out. He said before that he doesn't worry about the guy in front of him. He worries about the guy near the rim. Two defenders down. And that was absolutely the case tonight. He was getting around everybody. I mean, there was just an ability to drive and kick that we saw in that 30-11 stretch. That was the reason that Pat Riley brought him back on a four-year contract. That was very evident tonight, and that's why the Heat started sinking shots, is because Waiters was creating shots for himself and for his teammates.
I wonder, you know, to your point about whether or not they're stashing him, maybe it's the reverse. Maybe this is Spoelstra's way of motivating him by making him hungrier, by luring, you know, by kind of taking away the opportunities from him. Maybe that makes him more energized as a player. I don't know. I mean, Spoelstra is the only one who's privy to the inner workings of Dion Waiters' mentality and approach, and how he wants to handle that is something that Spoelstra will take with him to the grave. But maybe that's his motivation. Maybe he's thinking that's the best way to get to Dion, is to say, look, we're going to go to everybody else, and then finally we'll go to you. And when he does, he's going to come up big at some point. I wonder if that's the case.
Those are some crazy mind games, if that's the case. I mean, I guess, and look, I don't have a better explanation. Like, you could say, like, all right, maybe he's just like easing Waiters back in, but that's like a weird way to do that, to play 11 minutes and then zero and then zero and then 26 tonight, 25 right. tonight. Like, that's not a way to ease guys in. I don't know what the explanation is, so it's as good as an explanation as I've heard. Let's get to this next question from Claudia, who asks, I know how this is going to sound, but is Dion going to be our new Dwayne Wade? He comes into the game and he shoots dishes and brings great energy when he plays. Sounds a little like D-Wade. Would be cool for next year, just saying. And this is kind of building on that point that we made in our Monday podcast about, like, the Heat obviously have to make some moves with the trade deadline coming around. They've got to fix the logjam at guard. But they also have to be conscientious of the fact that Dwayne Wade is retiring after this year, and you don't want to end up going from too many guards to too few guards. And Dion clearly brings a specialized skill set to this Heat team that otherwise doesn't exist on this team, not even with Dwayne Wade. In his 16th season now, Dion is a unique player on this roster. He just happens to play a position where there's a lot of other guys at that position. It's something that the Heat are going to have to think about.
Look, to Claudia's point, I see a lot of similarities. And I think I mentioned this in Dion's first game back. His chemistry with players in pick and roll situations is kind of similar to what we've seen from Wade in his return to Miami. His playmaking ability, we've talked about it a number of times, something that has been missing over the past year and a half. So there's definitely some similarities in their game. I just don't know if those efficiencies are the same. Like, Dwayne Wade is still more an efficient scorer, better in a long-range shooter as far as his mid-range game is concerned. They both aren't good from three-point range, although I'd probably give the edge to Dion just slightly as far as a three-point shooter is concerned. And defensively, though, I think that's where the problem is. Like, as good a one-on-one defender as Dion is, I think Dwayne makes up for it with that length. His arm length in particular, having that 6'11 reach, has allowed him to be the best shot-blocking guard in NBA history for a reason. And I think that's something that's missing from Dion's game. But at the same time, the ball handling, the comfort, the first step, etc., those things are pretty similar to what we've seen from Dwayne Wade, maybe even at his peak. He's not going to have the same opportunities to take over games the way Dwayne Wade did at his prime. But at the same time, I think we can at least expect for him to be a competent scorer, playmaker, and that's something that we could use as far as our backcourt is concerned.
Worth noting that this is the first time ever that Dion Waiters and Dwayne Wade took the court at the same time as teammates. History was made tonight, despite the loss. History was made tonight, and that's important to note. It's time for our stat of the game.
Take that for data.
David, what do you got?
Well, I was looking at the assist totals. You wrote a fantastic piece for the Step Back on how Nikola Jokic has kind of inspired the Denver Nuggets to be a very pass-happy team, and I think we saw that tonight. They're the second, they rank second as far as assists per games from all teams across the NBA, second to just the Golden State Warriors by a shade there. And tonight they had 32 assists on, 41 made field goals. So they were passing the ball pretty efficiently. At first, I thought to myself that Miami's defense, particularly with Whiteside's length, making things a little bit more difficult for Jokic, I thought that maybe they might be finding a way to key in on those secondary passes there, because they're very good at moving the ball around. They like, I think a quote from your piece was that they like a light ball. The ball keeps moving. It's not stuck in anybody's hands for too long a time. Kind of reminiscent of that Spurs team that beat the Heat in the finals in 2014.
Ooh.
And they just
salt in the wound.
Sorry to bring it up. You know, 4 years later, it still stings, but at the same time, it's kind of reminiscent of that. And you know, to Denver's credit, they were able to find a way around guys like Johnson and Hassan Whiteside, even with Bam Adebayo playing pretty solidly against Jokic in the late in the game. They still made some fantastic passes, and to connect on 32 assists on 41 field goals, that's pretty impressive.
They're an amazing passing team. They're the best passing team in the NBA. They love to deliver bounce passes. There was one bounce pass at the end that just, you know, absolutely destroyed Miami's defense. They didn't know what to do, and that's sort of what the Nuggets' formula has been this season, is just to pass teams to death. You mentioned that Spurs comparison. It's a very good comparison. Bam Adebayo did play really good defense on Jokic. Unfortunately, and we've talked about this before, Jokic is taller than him, and Bam struggles against guys that are taller than him, and it's just... Unfortunately, that's the case, and I do again. I think Bam will get better, but that floater at the end by Jokic, to go back to it, Bam played perfect defense, and that was a really tough shot. But Jokic is a top 11 player in the NBA this season. Like, a lot of people don't watch Denver games because they're not on national TV, but hopefully Heat fans have realized how good this guy is. We talked about it with Ben Golliver on Tuesday's Locked On NBA. We compared Jokic to Embiid, and a lot of people might roll their eyes. We all picked Jokic over Embiid to start a team with, and we saw that on display tonight. Again, finished with a triple-double. Was amazing. Hit tough shot after tough shot in the fourth quarter when he took over. Bam Adebayo, 11 points in the fourth quarter. He played a great game. Whiteside, I thought, struggled a little bit, even though I loved his effort. This was a Whiteside game where you loved the intensity he came out with, loved his effort early on. Finished the game with a double-double, but just defensively, it was a bad matchup. Denver attacked him in pick and rolls over and over and over with Jokic and Jamal Murray early in the game. I think they made their first four field goals out of the pick and roll against Whiteside. They made all four of them. Spo made some adjustments, and it helped matters a little bit. But it just shows, like, even when Whiteside plays well and he's engaged and he's energized, there's just certain matchups that he struggles with. And to his credit, a lot of people struggle with the Jokic matchup, including Bam Adebayo. You know, so
yeah, that last shot, though, I mean, that was
ridiculous,
preposterous. Yeah. Like, I mean, that should not have fallen. I've rewatched it a number of times, and it's just ridiculous. Like, he kind of put it up there hoping for a foul call, is what it seemed like.
Mm-hmm.
And he got the shot to drop.
My stat of the game is 6, and that's the amount of turnovers that the Heat had. A season low in turnovers for them, which was phenomenal. And a lot of times when you only commit 6 turnovers, you're going to win the game. But unfortunately for Miami, they didn't take advantage of Denver's turnovers. Denver had 16. Miami only scored 14 points off those 16 turnovers. And the Nuggets still finished with more field goal attempts. I don't remember the last time I've seen a 10-point disparity in turnovers, and the team that had more turnovers ends up still with more field goal attempts. Denver had 87. Miami had 83. But then you really look at the stats, and rebounding is the reason for that. Denver had 50 rebounds. Miami only had 38. That's tough every time. Jokic obviously is a big reason for that. He had 11 rebounds, but you look at a guy like Torrey Craig who had 16 rebounds, Paul Millsap with 9, Jamal Murray, their point guard, had 4. I mean, they're getting rebounds from all over the place. They did a good job of crashing the boards, and that ultimately is, I think, what did Miami in.
Yeah, it was sad. Look, Miami has thrived lately on their rebounding. Their shot falling isn't, you know, their shot making isn't as great as most teams, and they kind of slow the pace down, and they have to capitalize on that rebounding to get those secondary opportunities. And against a team like Denver, I mean,
did they miss Derrick Jones Jr.?
Yeah, is he hurt?
Waiters got his minutes.
Yeah, that's
Waiters.
This is tough.
Waiters only had one rebound, but then again, like, the Heat aren't in this game if it's not for Deion Waiters, right? So it's kind of like, what do you do there? And like, this just sort of illustrates the problem that the Miami Heat have right now, is they have too many guys that do too many different things, and it's hard to know when to play who when.
Yeah, Tyler probably should not have played.
Yes.
Not a good game for Tyler Johnson, and so you figure that maybe in retrospect, you look back and say Derek probably could have played more minutes, and it probably should have played over Tyler Johnson.
Good point. All right, well, that's all we have for today. Thanks for listening. If you have a smart speaker, and maybe you got one as a gift over the holidays, you could tell it to play a podcast, Locked On Heat. Connect with us on Twitter at Locked On Heat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes. Yeah!